Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Welcome to episode 24 of Concussion Chats. My name is Taylor Fort. Concussion Chats is a podcast hosted by the McGill students for the Concussion Legacy Foundation with the help of Nick from Concussion Talk Podcast. We're dedicated to providing strength and hope to those suffering from concussions through sharing experiences. Today I have a recording of Nick. Nick is a two-time TBI survivor currently battling PCS and an online nutritional coach, and will be sharing his story and a few tips and tricks for recovery and managing PCS.
I'll try and give everybody a good background of who I am, what I'm about, and kind of what got me to where I'm at today, to kind of get a full picture of what has created me and where the damage had come from. So I'm in roughly, I just say Cleveland, Ohio. So I'm not too far from you guys, just in the States. And I grew up in the same area where I live, and everything seemed normal. And then when fifth grade came around, my parents split, and that was really out of nowhere. But what I didn't know was that that moment right there was going to lead to a large addiction out of the other three, my dad, my sister, and my mom, which all plays a role into brain health. And so kind of everybody did their own thing. Mom went her separate way, and I skateboarded for 10 years. The only time I ever, which was my first concussion, was I lost consciousness, was from biking. I went on a ramp, just kid, just doing his thing. And that was my first concussion that I actually had just had to think about as I was going through my now therapy. But, you know, I didn't play sports until high school. I got talked into playing football, and I was just a scrawny little 6 foot, 145 pound kid. In 3 years, gained 65 pounds, ended up, I don't know, if like Division I scholarships. Going into my senior year, I had a call from the Stork, if that's a Canadian word. And I found out I was going to be a dad in high school, which that's a big time turnaround. And so I ended up decommitting from the Division I school I was going to, and I ended up being able to stay home and taking care of my son, who is now 12, which is crazy. But and all through this time, I had witnessed, you know, my dad just totally spiraling out of control. I was watching, you know, my mom and my sister doing the same thing. And so I only had a choice but to continue, and also really just stuff that trauma away and continue on with my life. And so I didn't start concussions until 2010. So my freshman year of college, tore my right groin, rebounded, came back. My sophomore year, tore my left shoulder, rebounded, came back. And so I only knew, like, okay, well, you know, you get injured, come back and repair, come back stronger. But the following year is when the concussion started, and the first time I didn't say anything. It was in practice. It was after the whistle. This kid kept running at me, and I just put my head down, smart, right, and took a blow, and I saw purple. I'm like, wow. you know, I went to the sideline. I'm like, hey, I think I just saw purple. And of course, my buddies were like, no, man, Nick, you're good. You're good. So I'm like, yeah, you're right. So that was Tuesday. We drove. We had a game in the Upper Peninsula, Michigan Tech, if you guys are familiar in that area. And that's when second impact syndrome really kicked in, because I didn't say anything, but I couldn't figure out why I was very dizzy and tired, but I couldn't get pumped up for the game. I played defense. I played very recklessly. It was kind of my outlet to get away from things. And I liked to hit people in football terms, of course. But that game on Saturday, I had three serious blows that I delivered helmet to helmet. And on the last play that I was on the field, you see me collapse in the end zone, get back up and helped off. And, you know, I'm like, I can't see, you know, they're saying go back in, and this is where it's kind of blurry. But, you know, that right there was my first TBI, and I didn't know anything about it. Even back in 2010, concussions weren't really talked about as much. You know, research was just started in 2016, 2017. So, you know, was that the end of my career? No, I decided to try and play again 10 months later after I finally revamped and came back. And I was very more susceptible after that little bump. I was out. And then I had gotten a job my senior year, because I guess I have to pay the bills as a young father, at a juvenile jail. And the last concussion that officially made me retire from football was I tackled a kid into a cement wall and hit my head, and that was that. And so that was really what seems like forever ago, which what kind of started my concussion. And, you know, knowing me as like the kid that always needed to need a helmet to wear all the time. But, you know, as I fast forward, I had four or five concussions at the jail through 2012 to 2016-ish. And then I ended up taking my online business. But, you know, it was all dumb little bumps here and there. Like, it wasn't I get punched in the face or something like that. But as I fast forward to what led up to December 7th, 2019, a lot of trauma had happened that I'd always just stuffed away with. You know, I watched my sister's life totally spiral out of control. My dad finally hit a breaking point. And for 2 months, he was in the hospital. A month prior, my grandma had just passed, and I had lived with my grandparents after college because I didn't have a back to my dad's house. I couldn't afford anything at the time because I'm just a young college kid, and that's a single dad. And so grandma passes in February. A month and a half later, I watched my dad take his last breath. He passed away. And then that November, my grandpa passed. And then the following December, my grandma passed. So it was a lot to take in. And it was what I always did was I just stuffed it away and said, okay, I'll be good and continue on. But what led up to my TBI, the second one that I never ever felt before. I never got sick from a concussion. I never felt so lost, so sick, and so I couldn't even describe it. But we were getting a Christmas tree on December 7th, 2019, and they put it up on the top. We were good to go. I got called to the back of the trunk and walked around back, and I was kind of running, but I hit the top of my head directly in the trunk, and immediately felt like the soul was taken from me. I never felt as nauseous as I ever did right then and there. And as we got home, that was the time I threw up and I said, okay, something actually might be serious. Because what I did with sports, you know, I get hit my head, I would rest, I would walk, I would work out, and I would be, oh, I'm back to normal. But this was different. And I was seen by one specialist that said, you know, we're going to refer you out to one of the top clinics in Ohio. So I started there. And what a great time to start at the beginning of 2020, right? And so all leading up to that, I couldn't understand why I couldn't walk for very long without getting dizzy. I could no longer drive a car because the movement was making me nauseous, and nothing was making sense. My emotions were just at an all-time high. Everything had just, like, I had no control. I was just watching my body just wither away mentally, physically, and emotionally. And so when I finally got into the concussion clinic in March, I did 3 sessions, and it was for basically vestibular. So really just pushing your body until making the symptoms so ravaged that they have to basically rebound and come back. But ended up getting shut down because of the C word, COVID, and they couldn't do anything for, you know, 2 months till they let me back in to say, hey, let's take this test. Here's your numbers. Oh, look, you've improved. You're good to go. But I knew deep down I wasn't improved. Like, I've been struggling. And so then I get to June where I'm, you know, still kind of trying to find my way back. And my brother-in-law's in town, and we were setting up a ceiling fan, and I couldn't even make this up if I tried. He does this for the military. He's a super handy man, always doing things. And lo and behold, the ceiling fan fell on my head. And it was not a small ceiling fan. It was the bedroom, and went to the ER that night. I was very devastated. And it felt like things were starting to really go back downhill. And as time went on, August, September, I knew things were declining. I just felt my emotions starting to come back. I was starting to realize my physicalness of just being able to move, play with my kids. I have the 12-year-old, 2-year-old, and now a 6-month-old. And I was having to go back to laying and resting and barely eating and just feeling nauseous, feeling sad, every single emotion. Until I had to go back to what I knew best of going back to the concussion clinic in December. And as I went back, I'd been doing this research for months trying to figure out what is going on with my brain. Like, there's no way that I should just have to be taking this Topamax to mask my headache symptom that I barely even have. And my neurologist isn't answering the questions when I'm starting to bring up nutrition, and all of a sudden he's feeling flustered, like I'm trying to show him up. I said, I'm just trying to figure out my life. I want my life back. As I'm sure people can resonate with that, of doctors just not knowing. And so I started to do it again. And this time I was not progressing. And I even had my physical therapist say, pull me aside and say, you know, maybe it's just all in your head. And I looked at her, I'm like, I don't even have the energy to whatever. But honestly, it is all in my head because my brain is messed up. So, but she mentioned it in a different way. And so I finally had to do my own research, and was able to really, after I completed it, have to find these answers. I finally decided that I need to check in my testosterone levels because my hormones were damaged from my TBI after so long. And I said I was able to get on hormone replacement therapy starting 5 weeks ago. And it's been a huge game changer, but also starting. By doing the hormone replacement therapy, my primary doctor said no, because I'm technically in range, even though the range is from, as a male, 200 to 1100. Which is absolutely astronomical of a range, because they test 17-year-olds to 65-year-olds. So if you fall within that range, you're good. Otherwise, it's an insurance issue. And then all of a sudden, money comes into play. So if I'm at 371, my doctor said, oh, you're still in range. But not even close. I am absolutely suffering. I have never felt depression like I've ever had. And this is coming from a guy that thrives being around people. I like being the dude that just makes people laugh and have a good time. And you know, at 2 points, I haven't told anybody else besides my therapist or you know, my wife that, you know, I was ready to take my own life because I was lost. But that doesn't mean that it's, you know, it's a fake false reality of depression. Like, my brain was that sick. It was that sick. And until I started to make these changes through nutrition and through lifestyle and through hormone replacement therapy, that I was able to slowly put back my brain, my body, and literally my being. And I'm fortunate enough to just started working with Dr. Titus Chu starting April 1st, which is the leading post-concussion syndrome doctor out there. And said after 495 days, I posted about this, but on Monday I woke up without symptoms, and I didn't know what, if it was real or not. I sat there, I'm like, like, this is what, like, when people say normal, I don't want to be normal. I want to freaking feel alive. Like, I'm done trying to just survive, right? I'm done with that. And so, you know, this week has been a huge switch, and I can't say it enough. Like, if you would have saw me when I was asked to do this a month ago, I would have had to overstimulate, have to overcaffeinate, try and pretend like I was somebody else. Like, a switch happened Monday, and I have to ride this. And I feel like I finally turned a page of a new book. But I think that's trying to catch everybody up to speed of where I'm at. I do see somebody had their hand raised. Or if anybody have any questions, you can please feel free.
Today I have Emily, who is also part of McGill Students for the Concussion Legacy Foundation, Nick from Concussion Talk Podcast, and co-host Aaron, who is also the coordinator for the Newfoundland and Labrador Brain Injury Association, joining me.
Hey!
Emily, can you do anything?
Oh my gosh, can you hear that lawnmower?
I can. Yeah, vaguely.
Sorry.
Yeah, he told him to stop.
I don't hear it now.
Yeah.
Man. I walked away from it.
Stop mowing my grass. There, your door.
Room transfer. Sorry about that, guys.
No worries.
That was like perfect timing. As soon as he finished, lawnmower started outside my window. So, anyways.
Continue.
I really relate a lot to what he was sharing, but I'm gonna let you guys go first.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, before the meeting, actually, he'd said something to me about a lot of the people that he was looking into for treatment were in Canada, and that was surprising to me because I feel like usually people are looking into treatments that are in the States, and you know, so that when he said that, I was like, huh? So that was, I don't know, that was interesting.
Maybe he was just trying to be nice, trying to make conversations. Like, you guys are doing well too. Good for you guys.
Maybe, but like he said it before we really started talking about like where everyone was from kind of thing. Because he asked where like I was, and I said I was in Montreal. And then he said something about some of the stuff that he was looking into, like it was all in Canada. And I was like, really? Like, are you really? And I guess he's known Molly Parker for a while, so maybe that was a little bit.
She's American, though.
No, but she's also in Canada. I thought.
Yeah, she's in BC now, but she's she is from Washington, or California, or Oregon, or whatever.
That may have been a little bit why. But yeah, when he mentioned that, I was just like, huh? Like that's backwards. But I throw that in.
Yeah, no, his talk was really good. I found the like main thing that struck me though. I was just like, oh my gosh, how much trauma like has this guy gone through? And the way he was just detailing it, it seems like so. The last concussion he had that caused all these symptoms was only about a year ago, right? Like right before COVID.
Yeah. Like a year and a half. What the heck? It was like a year and a half ago.
Yeah, and so I was just so like honestly amazed by his progress in terms of like coming to terms with things and just being a positive outlook within his talk there, because he said like even within his speech he was just saying like, if you a month ago when I was asked to do this, I was in such a different place and thought I'd have to fake it. And even his ability to recognize that was really like, I was like, oh, like you're really speaking from the heart here and you've really recognized a lot of those places you've been. So yeah, I was just like, what a great journey he's had within the past like year or so, even though it probably never felt great, but he's certainly gotten to a better place, which was nice.
Yeah, it was cool that he also, I mean, he said like his like turning point was like this past Monday. So that was only a few days before his talk. Like that was super cool because, I mean, it was kind of like he was able to highlight like all like the bumps in the road, and then he was also able to just be like, yeah, and then on Monday, like and he, I think he said like 495 or something days like since it happened, and like this was like the first day he woke up like without symptoms, like he didn't know if it was real or not. It was just like so crazy, and he was just talking about how like, you know, he's kind of just gotta like ride this wave and go with it while he has it. And that was crazy that like it was just like Monday.
It's cool because usually like speakers you guys have and that we've talked about have like had this long journey. It's been kind of years since, and like they've really been able to refine that kind of talk. And then for him, he was just like, yeah, 2 days ago, like good.
Yeah. Yeah. Everything just changed. It was like a switch. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm sure like he'll have fallback moments and push through moments again coming through, because but it was really neat to like see him at that moment in his journey of it.
He was supposed to do Instagram takeover for us yesterday, but after the meeting, like he wasn't feeling too great, so we pushed it to today. And he still hasn't completely bounced back, so we're going to move it to Monday instead. And I think even that is awesome. Like, obviously, it's not great that he's not feeling awesome right now, but I think just, like, the, like, him being like, yeah, like, I started feeling great Monday, I'm feeling great right now, and then something happened, you know, feeling a little rough, and then going to go back at it and, you know, try again kind of thing. And it's all like, it's all involved in like the riding the wave and riding it out. Yeah, it's super cool that his kind of like turning point is really recent.
Yeah, I was just going to say that, like, just, I spoke last night to a group at the University, Memorial University, the congestion group here. And I was saying that I was like, for other, to mention in my talk that just like the comment between before and after me, and it's very obvious where the line was. Whereas when I was saying that, I was saying that concussion is more insidious, was going out. But I've noticed that people in the groups, so a lot of people, not just in your groups, and everybody I've heard talk about, can like document exactly when they're injured and how many days it's been. And I think someone else was talk. And just that this, it's bad perspective. I think it's there's a lot of perspective. Sorry, I'm laughing at Aaron's getting dead to the cat now. But yeah, a lot of perspective that you're saying that there's a, that thing saying people, the physio, his physio said, maybe it's all in your head, but that is, man, I've never heard anything like that, but apparently people hear that a lot, and it's a, obviously, you know, the way that people take it is a bad way, but I mean, it's kind of true that it is, I mean, not just that the brain thing, that's a little cheeky, but it's also like that, you know, it is just, it's my perspective too, also that can be just, if you think you're injured and you think you're, so it's not, and not totally like, not that people take it as in to mean you're faking it, but if people take it to mean more that it's that is just the way you look at life, and that I don't know, I've never documented my We can maybe document me. So I should have documented every day I was injured, but or notes of the things. But I just want to remark on the fact that most people have really taken injection every single day, and how long it's been, and what their symptoms are every single day, and what helps them, which is good. And you got to know the stuff. It's good for data collection, but it's also mentally can be very tough. But
yeah. And that's, I mean, that's also something that we've talked about the group, and the group is like the, I mean, how like documenting like every single symptom and everything all the time can be symptom provoking, because then you're fixating on them, you know. It's definitely good to like track stuff for sure, but it's I guess just about like the balance and like not completely fixating on it, you know. And I think that's where, like, you have to find the balance for sure.
Yeah, one of the ways I always think about that is, and I think I said this to somebody the other day at work, and she was really upset, you know, out of thought, and I turned around and I was like, hey, don't think about a white polar bear. What are you thinking about?
White polar bear.
Yeah. What's in your mind right now? And not to say, you know, it's like not always easy to let thoughts go.
Yeah.
And to not obsess. Like, it's very difficult and it takes a lot of practice. But just like starting to acknowledge the fact that when we do get hyper focused, this is the term that oh my gosh, Hillary, Dr. Duncan was talking about on one of our interview podcasts. When we hyper focus on symptoms, it can really perpetuate, like you're saying. But just starting to acknowledge that process, I think, is a big step. But it's tough when you feel minimized, right? Like, you want to be like, but this is my symptom. And so really finding a space, you know, like we've talked about, finding a space where you won't feel minimized, talk about it, and then let it go. You know, riding the roller coaster, not like stopping, pulling the emergency brakes in the middle of it, you know, while you're upside down on a loop, you know. That's what I feel like I've done in the past. I'm like upside down on the roller coaster, pull the emergency brake. Hang it, like that's gonna hurt.
But I think also the thing about what we're saying, the thing about just like not just necessarily fixing any symptoms, but like how this is people minimizing your symptoms is in. You know, this is how I'm feeling, but there's also, as we all have been talking about before, and we've had people on interviews about the mental health aspect of it too. So, when people say maybe it's in your head, I think, and not people, obviously, first thing to do, people obviously, because we're kind of trained by society and by where we are, just that means I'm native, but it could just be, if you look at native, is native, but also could be that it is in your head. It is like part of your mental mentality. It's like to prepare your mental state and just recognize that even though it seems like you're minimizing it, it may be that it is part of you, part of the day night. You not, I mean, I'm not talking to you directly, but I mean like just like one's own mental state. And that's part of the problem.
Yeah, I totally think that, I want to say real quick, I think that you're totally right in the fact, but I think like that phrase itself, it's in your head, it just has such a negative connotation.
Yeah.
But I think, yeah, that's look, it's kind of this, yeah, it's
it
kind of this flip of mindset.
Yeah.
It's this flip of mindset from, you know, I'm hopeless, I'm powerless, to, you know, maybe there is something I can do to make this a bit easier. And when we think, it can be like kind of really empowering to know that if you kind of work on changing your thought, that some of it will go away. But not saying that like, it's your fault, you're the reason you're feeling this way. It's just saying, are you adding to it or are you, you know, keeping it neutral or subtracting from it. And sometimes this hyper focus adds to it. It's kind of how I like to think about it.
Yeah, I think like you were saying, Emily, like the it's all in your head kind of phrase is definitely like it's of course linked to a bunch of negative things, and like and so it makes sense that it can, like, it doesn't help. And I think, like Nick was saying, kind of like to go on that, is also just like, it depends who it's coming from, where it's coming from, how it's being said also to you. That makes a big difference. And like where you are in the moment, like if right now you just need someone to like be supportive and be like, yeah, like this freaking sucks, like I hear you. Or if you need someone to give you some like tough love and be like, you know, like this is in your control, like the way you handle it is how it's gonna like how it's gonna play out, like it is all in your head, like it's all in your control and stuff like that. So I think it depends like what you need in that moment. Yeah, I don't know. And I think the all in your head thing also kind of goes with the like quote unquote like victim blaming that we've talked about before too. So it's just definitely like it's a hard, touchy thing for sure.
Yeah, I think that part of his story too really pointed out to me that like you are always your number one advocate, because I mean, after he heard that, he just was like, well, screw this, I gotta go find out my own research, because clearly I'm not getting help. And it's like, that was probably the best thing he could have done for himself in that moment, because he didn't tell her to like frig off and like go away. He was just like, all right, well, it's up to me. So it always is a reminder though, like you are your number one advocate. Like you will have to seek out these places. You can't take those kind of like words and the lack of, I don't know, respect, I guess, really, from doctors and professionals as it. Like you can still move forward and you can still do things for yourself. It sucks and like it's hard and it shouldn't be that way, but sometimes it's the reality.
I think another thing that also goes with the whole like being your own advocate thing, I mean, when he was talking about like the hormone replacement therapy and stuff and how like the range of like acceptable testosterone for males is 200 to 1100, and since he fell in that range, doctors were like, oh, like you can't be on hormone replacement therapy. Like they were very reluctant for it to do it, and it would just like wasn't something that was gonna happen. And he was at like, I think it said 370, 371, and so like, yeah, he's in the range, but he's not at like that optimal 1100 by any means, and he's nowhere close. And through being his own advocate, like in like pushing for all these things, he finally like got it, and like it's really helped. It's changed a lot for him, it sounds like. And it's, pardon?
I was just saying, I have no idea what the range is, but I don't know if that 1100 is necessarily optimal. 1100 is just the high end of the range. That's all I was gonna say.
Yeah, but, I think it's like finding that. I think the problem is they don't. It's like 200 to 1100 for like all ages, not all ages, but probably like what, right after puberty to maybe like 65, 70. So like, what is the optimal range for your age? And he's like not that old of a guy, you know?
Yeah.
So he probably shouldn't be on the lower end of the scale. His testosterone does drop off later on in life.
And another thing is he was saying that, even with like that 370 or whatever, his free testosterone was extremely low still. So whatever he had wasn't even working. So it, yeah. So I think, I mean, that also plays into it too.
That also makes me wonder about like women's hormone rates too, like estrogen, because depending on where you are in your cycle when you get a concussion as well, can be very effective to the symptoms you'll have. So.
And hormones are something that, I think it was Molly Parker, she actually talked about hormones a little bit, and she recommended a book too. But yeah, it sounds like hormones are definitely a big influence on concussion recovery. And it's something that isn't looked at by any means, which makes sense. I mean, people don't really know anything about concussions to begin with and how to deal with them. So obviously they're not going to really know about the hormone aspect of it. But it's definitely interesting.
Yeah, I also feel like, I don't know, forgive me if I'm wrong, I'm going to stereotype men here, but I feel like a lot of men also wouldn't want to admit if their testosterone was low, especially if these are sports concussion related. And it's like, oh, football, man stuff, like all that. And then if they're like, oh, this concussion also lowered my testosterone, I'm also can't play football now. Mm-hmm. And I feel I'm less of a man because I don't have this.
Yeah.
Like, and that would be hard to get someone to admit and like want to look at.
Yeah, definitely. And that's actually something that we did talk about, was like later on when we were all talking as a group, like we were talking about hormonal like replacement therapy and stuff like that. And he was talking about how now like he feels like he's getting himself back. Like now he feels like he can care for his family and he can like be the man that he like wants to be, sort of thing. And so I think like what you were saying is definitely like in the right field. Because I think, like men especially, and then we had another member, she brought up how, you know, like she also, she's got some pituitary like deficiencies and stuff. And, she was talking about how, like, since she got on hormonal, replacement therapy, like she feels like she's now gotten closer to like being the mom and the wife and the sister and the whatever that she used to be. So hormones are definitely really important to look into because they do affect us in huge, huge ways. And these two people are really good examples of how.
I'll leave the testosterone and the men's hormone thing. I'm fascinated over here for women and men's. I'll leave a lot of stuff alone. But just say like that, yeah, I got the. Today, this morning, I got an Instagram post. I was tagged in a post by Nicola White, or Nicola, I don't know if it's named Nicola or Nicola White from the UK. She's a Philadelphia player there, and she had a concussion. She had a concussion 3 years ago now, and she was saying that she didn't think she knows that her menstrual cycle would affect her hormone symptoms and her concussion. So I sent her the podcast they did last year with Lauren Zayaks and Molly and Lauren Zayaks, Katie Mitchell, and Mae Adams about women, concussion women and girls, and they talked about hormones briefly. But so I just kind of just happened to have got that email, that Instagram post this morning. So 5 minutes now.
Cool.
Yeah, I need to check into some of that stuff.
Yeah.
Learning more.
Yeah, I feel like it's one of those areas that's super overlooked.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, it's interesting. I really, I appreciated that he brought in, you know, all these, like, external, you know, you guys know I love talking about this, all these external consequences. External circumstances that happened while he was or like before he was injured, before this last concussion, during when he was getting other injuries. Because I always think about like with we see with trauma is like this dysregulation of the fight or flight system, right? And then with brain injury we see this dysregulation of the fight or flight system, and it's, you know, it's important to think about like how much are those playing off of each other, or just the fact that they are playing off of each other. I think to an extent, like some of the stuff that I went through, it's, you know, quote unquote a trauma for me. I look at and I'm like, man, that really like wouldn't have been a trauma for most of the population. But because I went into these things with a brain that was already like had a dysregulation of fight or flight, you know, it's one of these, you know, what is the word? Not a preceptor. It makes you a vulnerability to like having like trauma informed or traumas forming. So I think that's like, I really appreciate him like bringing that all up and tying it in. And I want to remind people that, you know, you don't have like concussion life and then other life. Like there, it is all one thing, you know, concussion life with life. And sometimes when it comes to, I think, trauma and external circumstances that aren't directly correlated or directly affected by the injury, we forget that they might be connected. But
it's been a big area of study now, like a grief or a loss or like a traumatic incident will change the way your brain is functioning. It's almost like you've had a concussion but you had no physical blow to your head, but it was just like that trauma caused it. It's been a new area of research that's very interesting as well.
Cool. Good to know. I've just been like connecting stuff.
You're on
to something.
Is that
that happened?
Is that my sound?
What's up,
Nick? I was wondering if the sound, the weird thing. I don't know if you guys are hearing it, but I was hearing weird sound thing. I don't know if it was me or not, but I feel it sounded okay now, I think.
Yeah.
Anyway,
Does anyone have any final?
I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. It was really good. I definitely enjoyed it. And he was
approachable.
Like even afterwards, like after his share, when we were like having our discussion and stuff, he was also he was funny too. So he was a nice guy to talk to for sure. All right. So, thanks to Nick for helping us do the podcast, and thanks to our speaker, Nick, for joining us, Thursday. We'll have a new podcast posted Monday morning. Our upcoming podcasts, can be found on concussiontalk.com, Spotify, YouTube, and Apple Podcasts. You can find more information about our group on concussionmtl.com. Our peer-to-peer support group is free and open to everyone. We hold 4 weekly meetings on Zoom. And we're also always looking for Thursday morning speakers. Thanks for listening.
HeadCheck Health bridges gaps in concussion care through simple, powerful technology. Join organizations like the Canadian Football League, Trek Factory Racing, the Canadian Junior Hockey League, Eastern Washington University, and Volleyball Canada, who rely on HeadCheck to improve communication and optimize care. Visit headcheckhealth.com for more.
The music at the beginning of this podcast is by Ben Sound. www.bensound.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.